Perhaps we'll read from Bhagavad Gita as it is, by presented by Srila Prabhupada. So, chapter 10, text 9. Oh, everyone, please turn off your cell phones unless you have a really good ringer. You like something danceable? Not quite. So machita madgata prana bodhyantak parasparam katayantas chamang nityam tushanti charamanti cha. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me, their lives are surrendered to me, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss enlightening one another and conversing about me. Prabhupada's purport, pure devotees whose characteristics are mentioned here engage themselves fully in the transcendental, loving service of the Lord. Their minds cannot be diverted from the lotus feet of Krishna. Their talks are solely on the transcendental subjects. The symptoms of pure devotees are described in this verse specifically. Devotees of the Supreme Lord are 24 hours daily engaged in glorifying the Supreme Lord's pastimes. Their hearts and souls are constantly submerged in Krishna, and they take pleasure in discussing him with other devotees. In the preliminary stage of devotional service, they relish the transcendental pleasure from the service itself, and in the mature stage, they are actually situated in love of God. Once situated in that transcendental position, they can relish the highest perfection exhibited by the Lord in his abode. Lord Chaitanya likens transcendental devotional service to the sowing of a seed in the heart of the living entity. There are innumerable living entities traveling throughout the different planets of the universe, and out of them, there are a few fortunate enough to meet a pure devotee and get the chance to understand devotional service. This devotional service is just like a seed, and if sown in the heart of a living entity, and if he goes on hearing and chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, that seed fructifies just as the seed of a tree fructifies with regular watering. The spiritual plant of devotional service gradually grows and grows until it penetrates the material universe's covering and enters the Brahma Jyoti effulgence in the spiritual sky. In the spiritual sky also, that plant grows more and more until it reaches the highest planet called Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna's supreme planet. Ultimately, the plant takes shelter under Krishna's lotus feet and rests there. Gradually, as a plant grows fruits and flowers, that plant of devotional service also produces fruits, and the watering process in the form of chanting and hearing goes on. This plant of devotional service is fully described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It is explained there that when the complete plant takes shelter under the Supreme Lord's lotus feet, one becomes fully absorbed in love of God. Then one cannot live, even for a moment, without being in contact with the Supreme Lord, just as a fish cannot live without water. In such a state, the devotee actually attains the transcendental qualities in contact with the Supreme Lord. The Srimad Bhagavatam is also full of such narration about the relationship between the Supreme Lord and his devotees. Therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam is very dear to the devotees. In this narration, there is nothing about material activities, sense gratification, or liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam is the only narration in which the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord and his devotees is fully described. Thus, the realized souls in Krishna consciousness take continual pleasure in hearing such transcendental literatures, just as a young boy and girl take pleasure in association. Prabhupada ki jai. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Samanitinamine Namaste, Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschapyadesha Tarine. So, this is one of the most famous verses of Bhagavad Gita. Lord Krishna says, Machittaha, those whose chitta, those whose minds are in me. Those whose minds are in me. The Yoga Sutras of Patanjali begin with a definition of yoga. The first sutra of the Yoga Sutras is Atta Yoga Anushasanam, now the teaching on yoga. And then the definition of yoga, yoga's chitta vritti nirodha. Yoga means to stop literally the turnings of the mind, vritti. And so that same word chitta, the definition of yoga is to stop the mind from turning away from Krishna. And so here Krishna says, machitta. One whose mind, whose consciousness is in me, and madgata prana, which literally means that someone whose prana, their life, prana of course means a life air and often just means life. So one whose life literally has gone to me, madgata prana, one whose life has gone to me. And there's one whose life is dedicated to me. And then Krishna says, bodhiyanta parasparam. Bodhiyanta. This word bodhiyanta is technically the causative third person singular present participle of the verb bodh. You see that? I'm being ruined in the academic environment. So, could no longer give a simple class. Anyway, the word bodhiyanta in Sanskrit is the causative. It means to cause something to happen. And the root is bud, from which we get the word buddhi, intelligence or discernment, and of course buddha, one who's intelligent or awakened. The word bud also means to awaken. And so bodhiyati means to awaken someone else. Bodhiyate, the word can mean that you yourself awaken. Here the word is bodhiyantak, means awakening other people, making other people wake up, or giving them intelligence, because intelligence is a type of awakening. When we're sleeping, we still exist, we're just stupid. And then when we wake up, we exist with intelligence, with consciousness. And so, therefore, these two senses of the word, these two synonymous senses, are there, which means to awaken or to become intelligent. And so here Krishna says that those whose minds are in me, those whose lives are dedicated to me, bodhiyantak parasparam, they awaken one another. They don't drag each other down. There was an old song in the 60s, Don't Drag Me Down. So that's sort of the theme for devotees also, right? In devotee relationships, don't drag me down. The idea is that we form relationships with devotees so that we can be enlightened and enlighten others, awaken each other. Just like many of us, when we were younger, lived in ashrams. Some people still live in ashrams, and some people are still young. But I remember, I have a vague memory of many decades ago of living in an ashram, and of course, we would literally wake each other up. That was, I often had that devotional service when I was a brahmachari in Boston in 1970, often to wake people up or to be woken up by them. So we not only physically wake each other up, we wake in each other spiritually. The Vedic system, of course, in a sense, is structured around the varnashram system. And the ashram system, interestingly, all stages of life are ashrams. And as Prabhupada says, an ashram is the place where spiritual values are cultivated. So the system is, it's quite logical, that in our youth, if we have the good fortune, we live in an ashram. And we have the good fortune of having our life absolutely regulated and controlled by someone who's only mildly medicated. I'm just joking. Anyway, when we're young, or who should be, this is a joke, those who were around in the old days will understand. So the idea is that when we're when we're in ashram, we do live under strict discipline. And that's very good for us. I could not necessarily relive those early days of my life, my spiritual life, but I am extremely grateful that I had that opportunity. It was an invaluable opportunity. It was really the foundation of everything that came later. Well, some people may think that's sort of a dark thought, considering what some people think of me, but anyway, certainly the foundation of so many good things that came later. And the Vedic system is that when we're young, we live under discipline, and then you go out and do it on your own. It's just like you take a driver's education course, or when you get your first permit, you have to drive with someone that already knows how to drive, but ultimately you drive by yourself. And so in the same way, the early stage of our spiritual life is like driver's education, how to drive through life in Krishna consciousness. The idea is we should learn it, assimilate it, and then go out and drive on your own. And, hopefully we don't go out and drive on our own, become some like a Vedic version of Mad Max. Or, in other words, when we graduate from the ashram, if that's what's happened to us, either by taking sannyas or getting married or whatever we've done, if we don't live in that highly regulated situation, we're supposed to be able to do it ourselves. Not necessarily that we exactly, let's say, go through a four-hour morning program or something, which personally I couldn't do. I mean, I probably could do it if I lived in an oxygen tent, but not outside of one. So we may not do everything exactly the same, but basically we should live in an ashram. So therefore, as Prabhupada always pointed out, it's grihastha ashram or vanaprastha ashram. Vanaprastha is actually becoming more of a reality as the ISKCON boomers are getting older. Anyway, so then there's vanaprastha ashram, and then there's sannyasa ashram. But the idea is that every member of Krishna conscious society is in an ashram. Is in an ashram. It's not that there's a time for spiritual life and there's a time for denying spiritual life by our actions. Every stage of our life is supposed to be an ashram. So Krishna says, Bodhiyantak parasparam. Krishna is the supreme rock star. In other words, because we are persons, because we are all individual persons, we cannot help but be attracted to other persons. And so sometimes we're attracted to other people because of our lust, sometimes because of our vanity, because we seek followers, or we become a follower of some person, sometimes for the wrong reasons, sometimes for various reasons. But the greatest person is actually Krishna. And so unless we are following Krishna, unless we are glorifying Krishna, as he says here himself, katayanta shamang nityam, always talking about me. If we are not glorifying Krishna, we are living an irrational life. We are living an irrational life to the degree that we are not always focused on Krishna. To live an irrational life does not simply mean that we have to be logicians or always be speaking, technical, intellectual ways. A rational life simply means that we have certain goals, we have certain desires, and we intelligently pursue them. For example, today, not too long ago, I performed the admirable feat of navigating our car from Gainesville to the farm. We actually got here. You see, so I'm not that old. I could still do that. So I had a particular purpose. I wanted to go from point A to point B. I wanted to go from the house I'm staying at to this farm. And so therefore, if I would have gone south, that would have been irrational. That would have been irrational. That would have been a foolish thing to do if I actually intended to come to the farm. Similarly, if my intention is to keep my body healthy, it is irrational to eat junk food, even Vedic junk food, even sacred junk food. So interestingly, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the highest category of food is healthy and it extends your life. So food which curtails your duration of life, anyway, it's not in that category. So The idea is you have a goal. We all have desires. So if I'm trying to achieve something and I adopt a method or follow a path which is going to frustrate me, which is going to prevent me from fulfilling my own desire, that is an irrational lifestyle. And so, and Prabhupada, frankly, as we know, was not shy about using words like foolish. So, Prabhupada also used to say all the time that we have to mold our life. In other words, if I see that my life, the way I'm living it now, I'm not really thinking about Krishna all the time, then it's my responsibility to try to reboot my life. In other words, I have to figure out a more intelligent way so that I can naturally think of Krishna more. It's like if you want to buy groceries, you go to a store, right? I mean, if you want to work out, you don't go to Mother Earth and start, you know, lifting the boxes. Well, some people might do it, can't afford gym membership, but... So the idea is that we have to figure out, what do I really want? And we have to figure out, if we really believe that Krishna is everything. Never mind our realization. I mean, all of us are works in progress. One thing is our realization, and we are all working at it. As far as our faith, though, in other words, when Krishnadas Kaviraj defines the word faith, Shraddha, which in Sanskrit means to put your heart in something. Interestingly, often in the Judeo-Christian traditions, faith means to believe that God exists. Like, do you have faith? Do you believe that God exists? Now, there's another word for that in Sanskrit, which is astikyam. Astikyam is from the Sanskrit word asti, which means he exists, or she exists, or it exists. But in this case, asti means God exists. So, from the word asti, God exists, comes the word astikyam. In other words, faith that God exists. And that's one of the qualities of a Brahmin, given in chapter 18 of the Gita. But the word Shraddha, which is the word most commonly translated as faith in our books, is a different word. The word Shraddha doesn't mean to merely believe that God exists. It means to put your heart in Krishna. Shrad means heart, and Dha means to place, to put. To put your heart in it, not merely to accept as a type of intellectual proposition that God exists. And therefore, we can fall into this trap of being philosophical theists and psychological atheists. In other words, my philosophy is that Krishna is the center. My practical psychology is that I'm the center. And so we have to go beyond mere philosophical theism. We have to actually experience reality as a God-centered fact. If we're not experiencing that in our real emotional life, in our real, you know, down here on the earth, in the trenches of daily life, are we actually seeing the world as Krishna's energy? It's like we've heard so many times in Bhagavad Gita class, we've heard the list, Bhumi, Apa, Anila, Vayu, earth, water, fire, air, etc. These are Krishna's energies. But when we walk out of this room and see a bunch of earth and some water or some air, are we seeing Krishna? Are we seeing Krishna? And the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam makes it very clear that the temple, literally the Deva Griha, the house of God, or the Mandir, the temple is simply a place to get into the right consciousness so that when you walk out the door, you see Krishna everywhere. This is stated very clearly in the Bhagavatam, in a very powerful verse, which goes, Archayamiva Haraye Pujang Jakshadhaye Hate, which means, literally, one who, with faith, undertakes the puja, undertakes to worship the Lord with faith only in the deity form. only in the deity form. And natat bhakteshu, and this person does not offer the same worship to the same deity in the hearts of the devotees, or does not offer the same worship to the same deity in the hearts of all living beings. The Bhagavatam says, if someone does not do this, then savhakta, that devotee, prakrita, smrita, is understood to be on the material platform. In other words, that person is not actually on the spiritual platform. So we come here to the Deva Griha, or the Mandir, the house of God, the house of Krishna, so that we can see Krishna and then take that vision and then see the same deity. The same deity installed here is in the heart of every living being. That same deity is in every tree, every bird, every insect of which there is no shortage in Florida. In the heart of every devotee, in the heart of everyone, the same deity. Imagine if you claim to love someone and you have a relationship with someone, and then that person comes to you simply dressed a different way and you reject them. You don't even recognize them, or you push them away, or even offend them. It's the same person, just simply in a different dress. So the deity, the real understanding of Krishna consciousness, is that every living body is a temple. Every living body is a temple with an installed deity. And the reason we come to this temple is because it's the best place to come to that consciousness that Krishna's there, so that we take it out. Prabhupada very clearly made that point in explaining how and why he organized his movement in a certain way. He said that the train of devotional service runs on two tracks. One track is the Pancharatrik Vidhi, which is coming to the temple, seeing Krishna, talking to Krishna. I mean, hopefully we don't, you know, we say hello and offer a prayer and don't simply gawk. So we come to the temple, we see Krishna, we should speak to Krishna, offer our prayers to Krishna. That's Pancharatrik Vidhi. And then when we go out and explain to everyone what we've seen, you know, it's the supreme eureka, you know, because, you know, I've seen the light. The idea is, if you really see Krishna standing there, then we want to go out and tell people about it, and that's the Bhagavad Vidhi. And Prabhupada said of the two, the Pancharatrik Vidhi is serving the Bhagavad Vidhi. So to have a community where Prabhupada is strongly in the center, a community that Prabhupada would recognize and admire as a community which is powerfully following him, seriously following him, it must be a community where people take their inspiration in the temple from the deity to get strength to go out and do what Prabhupada did every waking moment. And that is to help to save this planet. And actually, it's practically irrelevant what ashram one is in, what gender your body is, how old you are, your level of education, whether you're very advanced or not very advanced. It's actually irrelevant. And that irrelevance is stated very clearly in the Bhagavatam. Or, for example, how many hours you have to work at doing something else. All of that is irrelevant according to the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam says, akamak sarvakamu va, whether you have no material desire, that's a very advanced position. That's a very advanced position. No material desire. Or the exact opposite, something we can relate to more easily, sarvakamu va, we have every material desire. Or moksha kama, if we are simply trying for liberation. In every case, the Bhagavatam says, udaradhi, if you are actually open-minded, if you are actually a thinking human being, then tivrena bhakti yogena, with intense devotional service, one should worship the Supreme Person, yajeta purusham param. The same instruction is given to the highest and the lowest Vaishnava. The exact same instruction. Because whatever your position is, whatever your job is, ashram, gender, age, it doesn't matter. in your position, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says very clearly, Nama Shaya Kori Jatane Tumi Takaha Apanakaje. Stay in your position. Some people, of course, won't want to hear that. But anyway, stay in your position, whatever it may be, but take shelter seriously of Krishna's name. Every one of us, absolutely irregardless of our external position or of our, frankly, of our relative advancement, every one of us has the exact same access to Krishna's holy name, and we have the exact same access to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, when he introduced himself formally, seriously, to important people, would say, you can see this in letters in the Veda base, that allow me to introduce myself, I am the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Prabhupada did claim for himself a unique and exclusive position, and it's clearly documented. He never wrote a letter, allow me to introduce myself, I am the Diksha Guru of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. The unique and exclusive position that Prabhupada claimed for himself was that of founder Acharya, because within the Vedic culture, the Vaishnav culture we are following, there are hundreds and thousands of gurus, or millions of gurus, who serve the feet of the great Acharyas. Some people struggle to understand this, but it's very clearly stated in our literature. So, Prabhupada, as the founder Acharya, everyone in ISKCON, every faithful follower of Prabhupada has equal access to Prabhupada. It is not that because I had the honor of having Prabhupada as my Diksha Guru, that therefore I have a more intimate relationship, a closer relationship, or a more important relationship with Prabhupada, simply by that fact. Now, if I take advantage of that relationship, in other words, if I dedicate myself to Prabhupada, then exactly to the degree that I dedicate myself to Prabhupada, I will get his mercy. Otherwise, everyone equally has Prabhupada as their founder Acharya. And everyone equally has the holy name of Krishna as revealed and explained and not empowered, it's already, but as given to us by Prabhupada. Every one of us, right this second, has exactly the same opportunity to cry out Krishna's name, to cry out to the deity, to give our heart to Prabhupada and Krishna. Everyone has exactly the same opportunity. There's no advantage for men over women. There's no advantage for gurus over disciples. There's no advantage for Prabhupada disciples over disciples of other people. There's no advantage of the young or the old or anything. Not even an advantage to those people who grew up in Beverlywood, California, Mahatma and myself, you see. Very special neighborhood. Not even that. Actually, everyone, every one of us, right now, this second, well, please don't cry out until the lecture is over, but as soon as the lecture is over, you can start crying. Not because it was such a bad lecture, but because you... And that's exactly what the Bhagavatam means in saying that whether you have no desire or every desire, to surrender to Krishna, there in the collective consciousness or unconsciousness of ISKCON, there's a notion that to surrender to Krishna means you report to your local Hare Krishna temple, you know, empty out your bank account, give your furniture, your car, your children, you know, everything, put them all in the hands of someone who... Anyway, so... Because in the early days of the movement, that's what surrender was. To surrender to Krishna simply means you trust him. It simply means you trust that if I put myself in Krishna's hands, he's not going to drop me on my head. That Krishna is not, thank God, a religious fanatic. I had a very important experience in my life in Mexico City in 1975 when Prabhupada came there. And when I went down to Latin America, I was very young, well, younger than I am now. That was, well, what was I? My God. I guess my brain was almost fully solidified. What's the biology of young males? Anyway, it was 1975, so I was 26. I was 26 years old. And I went down there, you know, like a house on fire, like, you know, everyone has to be a very strict devotee or, you know, or we'll do something very bad to you. So the idea was, you know, everyone has to be very strict. And so when I went down there, because Latin America is so remote and no one really, GBC had never gone down there, there were some very exotic things going on in South America. And so when I got there, I was very, very heavy. And nowadays, I think I have a little more finesse. Anyway, so when Prabhupada came to Latin America about 8 months after I went there, and things were going well, but some of the other leaders there who I'd sort of, anyway, reprimanded for certain types of exotic behavior, they came to complain to Prabhupada that I was, you know, I was this and I was that. And so we were sitting in Prabhupada's room in Mexico City, and they sort of read their list of charges against me. And you know, I was getting really angry because they were saying that about me in front of Prabhupada. And so I started to defend myself, and Prabhupada just stopped me and said, like, you know, I don't want to hear it now. So I just sat there. Then they left the room. And then again, I tried to explain to Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada said to me words I never forgot. Well, I almost never forgot. And that is that he said, I understand. When I told him the real story, he said, I understand. However, they are my disciples. Do not break them. And so I never, and that was Prabhupada. He never broke anybody. He could speak very strong. We know sometimes people struggle with some of his strong statements in his book, but he never broke anybody. When push came to shove, Prabhupada would not shove you. He would never push you over the cliff. He would actually embrace you and pull you back. Whoever you were, if you accepted him, he would accept you no matter what. And so if Prabhupada, the pure devotee who transparently represents Krishna, never broke anyone, why do you think that Krishna is going to break you if you give yourself to him? So that fear we have, that if I fully give my heart to Krishna, if I fully surrender myself, I already know what Krishna is going to do, and I can't do it at this stage of my life, so I won't even go there. Krishna is not a one-trick pony. And to think that I already know what Krishna will say if I surrender, is, if you think about it, is a little demeaning and offensive. That Krishna is so predictable, and you know, Krishna is just caught in these pious loops. And if you surrender to him, you're just going to get drawn into a loop, and you can't do that loop right now, so don't even bother. Better I just sort of have my own life right now, see Krishna on Sundays, and not offer something to Krishna I can't really deliver on like myself. But the good news is Krishna is not a religious fanatic. He's not foolish. He's actually quite bright. And if we give ourselves to Krishna, he's going to create for us a perfect program. The irony is that those who actually give themselves to Krishna, trusting his discretion, actually satisfy their material desires in a better way and advance in Krishna consciousness and do not become degraded. No one in the history of the world ever gave themselves to Krishna and got dropped on their head or broken or anything like that. So therefore, there's only one reason that people do not walk up to the deity and fully give themselves to Krishna. The only reason is sheer ignorance and a concept of Krishna which is actually offensive. That Krishna doesn't know. It's like, I don't think I can accept Krishna as my life coach because he's going to, you know, tell me to lift 20 pounds when I can only do 10. He's going to tell me to do 30 repetitions and I'm going to, you know, bust my body. I can only do 15 repetitions. So therefore, in other words, all you need is just a little, all you need is spiritual intelligence to give yourself to Krishna. And if you give yourself to Krishna, he'll give you the perfect program. You'll have the best possible life. And in the end, you'll come back to Krishna. So, bodhiyantak parasparam katayantacha mang nityang tushanti cha ramanti cha. This is our satisfaction. I was passing, actually past Turkey Creek, and this is not in any way meant to discourage or offend or in any way lower the self-esteem of those devotees who live in Turkey Creek. Because, I mean, it's not a bad place to live if you want to live in this area. However, what I'm going to talk about is not Turkey Creek itself, which I'm sure is a very nice place for Hare Krishna devotees. However, the sign, it's the sign that says a golf course community. And I was thinking, oh my God. A golf course, not a wisdom community, not even a yoga community, not even a political action community. It's a golf course community. I mean, the community is, I mean, I know it's better than the sign. But, I mean, you can see the state of consciousness. You can see the state of consciousness. So, anyway, I'll wind up. But lately, I mean, at different times in our life, we become inspired by different mantras. I know when I was a young devotee, the most inspiring mantra was Sharira Vidya Jal, and so on. And I very gradually got beyond that. So, but lately I've really been thinking a lot about that wonderful second Shikshastika verse. Nam namakari bahudha nija sarva shaktis. That all of Krishna's own power is in the holy name. In other words, every one of us has, you could say in the palm of our hand or on the tip of our tongue, omnipotence. We have omnipotence. Prabhupada gave us infinite power by giving us Krishna's name. So, nam nam akari bahudani ja sarva shaktis. It's funny how some people talk of this thing like shakti pot, like the guru, you know, puts his head on your hand and you pass out. When you wake up, you're enlightened and your wallet's gone. So, anyway, Prabhupada actually gave us omnipotence. Nam namakari bahudha nija sarva shakti. Sarva shakti literally means omnipotent in Sanskrit. Omni means sarva and shakti, potencia. So, nija sarva tatrarpita niyamitak smaranena kala. And this is a very powerful word, the word arpita. The word arpita means offered. This is the word used to describe our offerings to Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna uses this word arpanam to describe the offering that we make when we make offerings to Krishna. And this verse says that actually Krishna has now made an offering to us. Just as we make an arpanam, we make an offering, like in the Bhagavad Gita, brahma arpanam, brahma havir, just as we make an offering to Krishna, he has made an offering to us. Because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, as you approach me, I reciprocate. So what is Krishna's offering? Tatrarpita. He's offering us omnipotence. He's offering us infinite power. Tatrarpita in the form of his name. And niyamitak smaranena kala. And in chanting this name, the kala, the time is not restricted. It's not like, okay, you know, like Mahaprasadam is being given out, but only, you know, between 7 o'clock and 7:15, or Janmashtami comes but once a year, or you can't go to Mangal Arati at 9 o'clock at night, unless you, you know, had your computer automatically recorded on the webcam. So the idea is that if you look at the Vedic ceremonies, things are regulated, they're restricted. It's this time, not that time. But kala, the kala is naniyamita, it's not restricted. The word niyamita is like it's the second stage of yoga, yama niyama. So niyama means a restriction. And tatarapita niyamitak smarane, in the remembering of the holy name. The time is not restricted. And then Lord Chaitanya says, etadrashi tava kripa, such as your mercy. Etadrashi tava kripa. Bhagavan mamapi, such as your mercy, O Lord, even on me, even on me. But durdaivam idrashami haj ani nanuraga, such as my misfortune, durdaivam, that steady attachment to your name did not awaken in me. So if we could somehow or other understand that all power is in Krishna's name, that we have the power to achieve anything, we can perfect our life if we simply take Krishna's name seriously. And there is no... Krishna says clearly in Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Sarvabhutesha, I'm equal to everyone. There is no advantage, there is no disadvantage for any ashram, any varna, any race, any age, any gender. Everyone stands equal before God. And therefore we see that some humble devotees, no one knows their name, you know, just Joe Prabhu or something. They actually are steady, they do nice service, and some people in very exalted positions go down in flames. So everyone is equal in the eyes of God, the eyes of Krishna. He says that, I'm equal to everyone. So we can all intensely give ourselves to Krishna, trust his intelligence in engaging us perfectly. Krishna does not want to bring a bunch of frustrated pious people back to heaven. There is no use for Krishna in you ending this life dreaming about what you might have had, the way things might have been. So, therefore, Krishna, if you give yourself to him, will create, has already created, if you just accept it, push the Krishna button, Krishna will, in the most perfect, ingenious, effective way, satisfy your material desires and bring you back to Godhead. Because Krishna knows perfectly well he cannot bring you back to Godhead unless he helps you to work through your material desires. If you let Krishna create the plan, you won't become degraded. You'll have a great life. You try to do it yourself, you'll end up with a bunch of, you'll go up the Viraja River without a paddle, so to speak. You're gonna have, you know, some very nasty experiences in life. So the question is, as I say, if everything else fails, read the directions. If we just give ourselves to Krishna, he will work you through your material desires in the best possible way, better than you could do it yourself, and you'll go back to Godhead. So no one has any good reason not to give themselves immediately and completely to Krishna. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions? If not, I'm going to auction off some of my personal paraphernalia. Yes. Yes, back there. Yes. Turn yourself in. Just turn yourself in. Put your hands up and turn yourself in. Krishna's a person, and according to Rupa Goswami, he actually speaks English. Because Rupa Goswami says, right, one of the qualities of Krishna, master of all languages. So there's no language problem. Just raise your hands and turn yourself in. So, anything else? Yes. No, someone's raising. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.